We're on our election road trip in Nashville, Tennessee today ahead of the Super Tuesday primaries tomorrow. Tennessee is one of many southern states that will vote, and Nashville is home to the headquarters of the Southern Baptist Convention. It's the largest Christian denomination in the U.S. after Catholicism, with about 15 million members in the United States. Candidates have been courting their votes. And we sat down with Russell Moore, the president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. I asked him what he thinks of the campaign so far.
I think this campaign gives me reason to think someone has released LSD into the water system in this country. And every single day, one looks at the news and cannot even fathom that it's happening. And yet, every day there's something totally surprising, sometimes shocking, and often horrifying.
What's horrifying to you that you've heard?
Well, I think it's horrifying that we have a campaign where some of the most vulnerable people in American society are being scapegoated and have some of the most awful things said about them. I think of not only immigrants, but also women and African Americans and the disabled and others. When we have the coarseness of this campaign, where people can't even bring their small children to rallies for fear of what sort of screamed profanity will be taking place, a campaign where we're debating issues that ought to be that we ought to have a consensus about. For instance, religious liberty and war crimes and torture and those sorts of things. That's deeply, deeply disturbing to me that that's taking place this year.
And what are the most important issues to your members?
I think one of the most important issues is religious liberty, the freedom of all people, not just people who agree with us, but of all people to be able to believe, worship, and carry out their convictions freely without interference from the government.
And do they feel that they can do that right now?
Well, they feel as though religious liberty is under attack and has been over the last 7 years in ways that we couldn't have imagined. I mean, we've had several important religious liberty victories over the past several years. The Hobby Lobby case. For instance, we have the Little Sisters of the Poor case coming before the court this year. But frankly, who would have imagined that we would have to be in court saying that the government shouldn't be able to coerce nuns to violate their consciences with birth control? So there are numerous religious liberty questions facing.
You haven't mentioned marriage.
Well, marriage is a very important issue, marriage and family. And after the Obergefell decision, right now the question is what happens when you take an institution that has been defined for millennia and seek to redefine it through government power. And so I think that the marriage decision really focuses evangelical Christians on how much is at stake with a Supreme Court. And so I've been saying for some time that it seems to me that both sides of the culture war are really voting for Supreme Court this year. Mm. I think that's been upended of sorts because of the craziness of the election cycle so far, when we really haven't been talking about those important foundational issues of what's the judicial philosophy that we're going to be facing over the next 50, 100 years. Instead, we've been talking about issues of less seriousness, so
such as
that way. Well, the daily bread and circuses from the Trump campaign that seems to suck up all the oxygen in the room. And so we're having to discuss whether or not we should ban people from the United States of America on the basis of their religion. I mean, that not only is that a blatant violation of an American principle of religious liberty, everyone knows it's not going to happen. So we have to have these conversations rather than talking about serious matters.
Do your members believe that the next president is going to be able to in some way reverse the Obergefell decision through a court appointment?
No, I don't think that there are very many people who think that this is just a matter of a presidential election or two. But what they do understand is that courts matter, and that judicial appointments matter. And so you see that not only with Obergefell, but also with Roe v. Wade and the Casey decision and other decisions that have imposed an abortion culture and an abortion regime on this country. I think people understand and know why court appointments matter.
But do they think that on the issue of abortion and on the issue of marriage, that they will be able to change course and go back in the other direction?
I think we could. On the abortion issue, for instance, if you were to go back in a time machine to 1973 and ask, what will the pro-life movement look like in 2016? Probably most people would say, by then, the abortion issue will just become normal in American life. It hasn't. There's a thriving, active pro-life movement. There's a great deal of hope of what can be done over a long period of time of continuing to persuade people and seek to speak to people's consciences and to work through the judicial process.
Who do you think would give evangelical voters a better justice? Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton? Or would it make any difference? Do you think that you could count on a Trump presidency giving you the kind of judge that you would want on the court?
We have absolutely no idea what Donald Trump would do in terms of Supreme Court justices. I mean, we know what Hillary Clinton would do. She's told us. And so we have a track record, the same sort of justice that we have with President Obama has given us and before that President Clinton has given us. Donald Trump has not told anyone what he would do in terms of a judicial philosophy, in terms of what sort of Supreme Court justice he would appoint. So I think that's the problem.
The other day, Mitt Romney brought up the issue of charitable giving and said that, you know, once people have a chance to look at Donald Trump's tax returns, they will be able to see whether he's actually given to the causes that he has in the past. How important, because religious organizations are some of the biggest charitable organizations in this country, how important is a candidate's charitable history to you?
Well, I think it's something to look at, is whether or not a candidate is looking outside of himself or herself toward helping the vulnerable. As a Christian, I believe what Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And so I think that's one factor to look at in a candidate's integrity.
As you know, Jerry Falwell Jr., the president of Liberty University, endorsed Trump.
Yes.
Sounds like you're not endorsing, but just based on what you've said, it sounds like you have some difference of opinion there.
Well, I think the difference that we would have there would largely be over the definition of the gospel. My main problem here is not a leader endorsing a candidate that he believes would be a good leader. My problem is when these leaders are asked, is this person a Christian and reflective of Christian values? And the answer to that is yes. That brings serious concern to me, not as an American and not as a citizen, but as an evangelical Christian. I mean, it's to the point this year where evangelical has become used in ways so disconnected from the gospel that I just said this morning, I no longer even refer to myself as an evangelical. Hmm. I choose to refer to myself as a gospel Christian right now.
Why? What do you think people hear when they hear evangelical?
Oh, well, I think right now evangelical is being used merely in political terms. And for instance, when every Tuesday, when there's an election and we have reports back about what the evangelical vote has done, and people aren't going in and differentiating between people who simply self-identify as evangelical and people who actually worship and go to church, I think that's a problem. There are all sorts of people who can identify as evangelical who may well be drunk when they're responding to the exit poll and haven't been to church since vacation Bible school when they were children. Hmm. And so in that sense, evangelical has become meaningless. And then when you have some, not very many, but you have some evangelical leaders who are willing to proclaim as a Christian someone who says that he has never asked God for forgiveness or repented of his sin. That's the very definition of the gospel. What it means to be a Christian is to have faith in Christ and have repented of one's sin. Then the word doesn't have a meaning anymore. I mean, evangelical is rooted in the word for gospel. And if we don't have a commonality around the gospel, then we just don't have much in common.
Russell Moore, president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Well, if you're an evangelical and you are planning on voting tomorrow, we'd love to hear why you're voting the way that you're voting. You can let us know at hereandnow.org.